This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are about 36 minutes away from Governor J.B. Pritzker delivering his State of the State and budget address today. And we are joined now by the new Republican, we are joined now by the Republican leader of the Illinois House of Representatives, no longer new. That is Toni McCombie. She is from Savannah, Illinois, which is a small Mississippi River town in the northwestern part of our state. Leader McCombie, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Well, thanks for having me.
I need to update my script from last year. And I want to begin by asking you just to respond to some of what I believe you were listening in there to what Governor, or I should say Speaker Welch had to say, specifically about Republican participation in the budget process. This has been an ongoing theme for a number of years now. As I mentioned, Republicans are in the superminority in the General Assembly. Democrats don't need them as long as they hold together to pass budgets. How do you think the Democrats have done, though, at including your side of the aisle in the budgeting process?
Well, I unfortunately did not hear the speaker beforehand because we were in caucus. But, you know, last year, if it's any indicator, I'm going to guess we're not going to be involved in any of the budget negotiations or conversations. That being said, I'm not sure that the House will have the budget like they have in the past, you know, as you're aware, Brian, the Senate took over the process, and I'm more than willing and have reached out to Senate President to ask for us to be a part of the process. And I've certainly also reached out to Speaker Welch to say, you know, my door is open and I'd love to have you.
All right, well, let's get into some of the specifics about state finances then. Governor Pritzker's budget office is projecting Illinois faces a nearly $900 million deficit in the next fiscal year. It gets worse from there. As I said earlier, that number is fluid. It could change depending on a lot of different factors, the stock market, what tax laws are allowed to expire or renew, that sort of thing. But I wonder what specific cuts or revenue increases are House Republicans prepared to support in order to meet that challenge?
Well, we'll have to see what that proposal is. We had our leaders meeting yesterday with the governor, and he stated that he saw it actually a 1.9% increase, putting the budget at 52.7. So we'll have to see what that is. If he's looking at an increase of, you know, 1.9%, and we're already talking about a $900 million deficit, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. So like we have talked about our initiatives and the things that are important to us is obviously paying the bill for education and paying the bill for our pension. And from my understanding, those are both going to be funded from our meeting yesterday. So that's good. We didn't talk about really any cuts per se in the budget yesterday. He talked about $10 million, for example, of an increase in MAP. A 2% increase on higher ed, talked about obviously additional funding in the migrants that he announced last week. So he didn't talk about any cuts in our conversation yesterday. So I'm pretty interested in see what those will be.
Yeah, and we've seen reporting on different groups asking for different spending increases, or I guess some would be tax breaks. Child tax credits, school lunches and breakfasts, as you mentioned, asylum seekers, maybe even a new ballpark for the White Sox. Are Republicans prepared to vote for any of those requests?
Well, we haven't received any requests, and I'm sure he's not going to be talking about the White Sox or the Bears in the budget. But we are prepared to work together to formulate a plan that puts us in a better position. We talk all the time about raising our tax base and not our tax rate. So that's huge. Certainly we'll be looking for right away any sort of funding for a constitutional amendment because there is rumor of trying to push the graduated income tax again. So we'll be looking for that when we see the budget right away. That would be something we're certainly not interested. We've already, the government has already tried to do that and that did not pass. So we certainly don't want any new taxes. We had a really rough year last year for our businesses. So any sort of tax increases on our small business is not going to be supported by Illinois or by Illinois Republicans. That's for sure.
Say more about that. What do you mean a rough year for businesses?
I think we had, don't quote me on it, but I believe we had 31 bills that were anti-business bills just last year. I think they passed, and I think the Senate only stopped 9 of them. So these are additional hits that and mandates that are put on to businesses. I mean, just yesterday there was conversation about tying our diesel emissions to California law. This would be the end of a Midwest state where trucks go through. This would end our trucking business. This would destroy Illinois' economy. So these are things that we cannot allow and cannot support as Illinois Republicans. We just cannot.
So you're talking about laws that come out of Springfield when you say a rough year, not necessarily that the state GDP. I mean, it's been sort of a rising tide lifting all boats. I have, you know, we've seen record low
That's right.
unemployment and that sort of thing. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and there always is a cost with every bill we pass. There always has been, and there always will be. So we have to be more aware of that.
I want to come back to this issue of migrants and asylum seekers. We did hear from a number of our listeners writing in about this. It certainly dominated a lot of press attention this year, or in the past few months, I should say at least. You have said there ought to be a limit on the number of migrants coming to Illinois. Since so many of them, tens of thousands, are being sent here by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, how would you propose enforcing such a limit?
Well, I haven't mentioned a limit, but what I have said is that number one first thing that has to happen is that we have to secure the border, and that's up to the federal government. Secondly, I said that we have the folks that are here today, and let's put a moratorium on and who else is coming in. Now, that being said, the governor, Governor Pritzker, blames Abbott on that, but there again, I blame the administration, and we need to secure the border. I also say that not putting a moratorium on the Trust Act is another reason that buses continue to be delivered to Illinois, as well as several other states. When there's no Trust Act in place, that you are going to see folks coming here from other countries, especially when they get Cadillac insurance compared to you and I.
Oh, wait, the Trust Act, though, that was, I just want to remind listeners, that was signed by Governor Bruce Rauner, who was a Republican, and it specifically deals with people who don't have legal status, right? It's not, this is not people seeking legal asylum process. And now we can debate whether everybody who's coming up is entitled to asylum and if the process takes too long. But I mean, what does the Trust Act have to do with these particular migrants we've been discussing, you know, coming up from Venezuela and elsewhere?
Well, there's no penalty. For example, we were in Chicago with former Congresswoman Flores not too long ago, and we were speaking to a group of about 15 Venezuelans that were here at a shelter. And as I'm looking around, I see three electronic monitors on these folks. Didn't think too much of it. And then to discover at that same location the very next day, there's somebody who had, I believe it was $60,000 worth of drugs and illegal guns. That individual gets to stay in Illinois. If the Trust Act wasn't in place, ICE would have came.
The governor has allocated $160 million to help deal with this migrant situation back in November, recently pledged another $182 million for the next budget year. Do you support spending that amount of money on the migrants?
I don't support taking money away from our most vulnerable Illinois citizens.
What should be done then about all these tens of thousands of people who've arrived in Illinois and have really no place to go? And I mean, I don't really, I know that sounds like a leading question, but it seems like a genuinely vexing problem to deal with here.
Well, this has become truly and honestly a humanitarian issue in the nation. And there again, it needs to start at the border, and that has to start with President Biden and his administration. We have to secure the border. If we don't do that, we're the only country right now that appears to have a open border. And you know, we were there. Representative Cabello and I and three sheriffs went down to the border, and it is a true humanitarian issue. We talked to folks that were coming in, businesses that are on the border, that are people are coming across. We went to Catholic Charities, and we see these families who have basically been trafficked, been raped. This is horrible. These folks are coming here to seek asylum when they're not going to meet the political asylum requirements. So the administration has to start there. The folks that are coming here, You know, they're getting bused here because we're a sanctuary state. We're welcome. We're a welcoming state, just like all of the others that they're getting bused at. And this is only going to get worse until it stops.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are about 26 minutes away from Governor J.B. Pritzker's address to a joint session of the General Assembly. It's his combined State of the State and budget message today. We are currently speaking with House Republican leader Tony McCombie about that and other topics in state government. 800-222-9455 to join our conversation. I alluded to this earlier. White Sox chairman Jerry Reinsdorf was in town yesterday meeting with legislative leaders. I didn't specifically see if you were among them, but news reports have basically said the Sox are seeking $1 billion in diverted tax money to relocate to the South Loop. I wonder how that goes over with you.
Well, we did meet yesterday, and it was really just a meet and greet, a very high level meeting just to introduce, which I appreciated. And they showed some plans, and we didn't really dig into money. It was a very short meeting. But it was more of a meet and greet. I'm interested in, you know, I believe public-private partnerships are the way to go, and they're successful. And if there's something that we can do to, you know, grow our tax base in South Chicago, southern part of Chicago or downtown Chicago, we should do that. So I don't know if that means we should pay for it. I don't think that's what it means at all, but I think we should be supportive of hearing what they have to say and how we can help them with a private-public partnership. I'm certainly not going to propose and support any tax increases, but I'll be interested to see what they come up with. I think the initial meeting was very generic, so it'll be a long haul, I'm guessing.
We've got about 5 minutes left in our time together. I do want to touch on some other issues that are maybe not as related directly to the budget. You recently launched a podcast series. You're calling it Capital Crimes. I understand it's going to be about incidents of crime that prompted the filing of legislation in the General Assembly. Can you just briefly give us an example of one of the topics you'll be talking about?
Yeah, the first one that we had, which has been released, is dealing with the Pam Knight death. She was murdered in district when I first got here, actually, in 2017 and died. So it's about her. And this is a bill that still is a top priority for me that we have passed in the House, and then it was killed in the Senate. And we're going to continue to push for that. So that's one of them. And it's going to be a series of four podcasts, and it's going to really talk about DCFS is the second one. And we'll go into the other two. So it's pretty cool. We have Dean, who has a great radio voice. Nothing against you, Brian, but he's done a really nice job.
No, I'm interested in this because, you know, I certainly acknowledge that that case is a tragedy for Pam and her husband Don and their family and friends. I should note that her killer, I believe, is serving 21 years in prison. I do want to press you on this, though, because not long ago, there was a bipartisan consensus in Illinois during the Rauner administration that the state had gone too far with penalty enhancements, ratcheting up prison sentence. And there's evidence out there that shows the increasing severity of punishment doesn't really deter, or does little, at least, to deter crime. I wonder why turn away from that approach to crime and punishment in Illinois?
Well, Brian, I'll say, first off, this isn't, I would say, not a penalty enhancement at all. This is, you know, cleaning up a loophole. This is the DCFS worker should be, and also the Department of Aging, which we discovered through this process, those folks that are investigating elder abuse. These are very volatile situations. They should be treated no different than if somebody hurts a teacher, a fireman, a police officer in work. This should be the exact same. It was our understanding that it was missed years ago when there was changes to the law. So to be quite honest, Brian, I thought it was just going to be an easy cleanup. I didn't realize it was going to be this political football. That being said, I'll even push back a little bit further. It's okay for my colleagues on the other side of the aisle to say that penalties do not deter crimes. But if you remember last year, I did a speech on the floor of exactly how many penalty enhancements they pass. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say we as Republicans don't get to do it, but we as Democrats do. So that's just not right. And I plan on saying another speech this year, and I'm going to guess that penalty enhancement increase has gone up again.
As we have just about 2 minutes remaining, I do want to end on a big picture note, which is, as you know, Democrats in the Illinois House hold 78 seats to the Republicans' 40. They can run the state without Republican input if they should so choose. How do you make sure that you and your party remain relevant to lawmaking in Illinois?
Well, we're relevant right now, even with 40 in the House. We represent parts of all 102 counties, and a lot of people don't realize that. That being said, politically, we've got a great roundup of candidates, and we're going to flip some seats.
This is not an easy time to be a political leader in America. Particularly, we've seen challenges in uniting the various factions that make up the modern Republican Party. I wonder what you have learned about leadership in the 15 months or so that you have been House Republican leader in Illinois.
Well, it's a lot, Brian, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I'm getting around the state to visit. I've realized exactly how big our state is just visiting Representative Schmidt's district the other day. It was a 9-hour round trip. So I'm really learning a lot. I'm learning more about, you know, with me being here 6 years prior, you know, you're used to your committees and thought I was an expert on a lot of things until I became the leader and realized, wow, there's so much more to this. So I've spent last year spending a lot of time on learning about, you know, the medical side, the Medicaid, the budget, and I've really enjoyed it, and I look forward to continuing.
Tony McCombie is a Republican from Savannah and is the House Minority Leader. Leader McCombie, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, we are going to have a preview of the governor's budget and State of the State address with two experts in public policy and Illinois government finances. Then at noon, stay tuned, and you can hear the governor's speech himself, followed by some analysis and reaction. That is all coming up here on the 21st Show. Stay with us.